This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right, hello, welcome along to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's the part of the week where we take a trip to the furthest corner of the universe and then we get back to Earth, land safely on the ground in about 25 minutes. My name's Dan, thank you so much for giving us a listen. On today's show, where we investigate the most amazing, weird and deadly things that happen in the universe, we'll talk about the ice that is forming around Jupiter. Also, we'll chat about the ninja spider that eats all its mates, and you can learn how to easily help save a whole species. That's on the way after we catch up with one of our favourite geniuses at Fun Kids. His name is Professor Hallux, and he's having a look what happens deep down inside your mouth.
Professor Hallux's Digital Dental Depository, with support from Philips Sonicare.
To honour great Uncle Halitosis, dentist extraordinaire, on the occasion of his 100th birthday, Professor Hallux is creating a pop-up digital dental depository, an oral health help desk. He's going to see how many questions all about teeth he can answer against the clock.
Give us a hand, will you, Nanobot? The turbine needs winding. Here you go. You can ask the questions. Today, they're all about the bugs in our mouths.
Bugs in our mouths? What on earth do you mean by bugs?
What I mean by bugs is microorganisms such as bacteria. Tiny living things which make a home in all sorts of places on Earth, and that includes mouths. Bacteria collect everywhere in the mouth, and not just on the teeth and gums. They often cover parts of the cheeks and the back of the throat. They can also live in between all the bumps and ridges found on the tongue.
Not keen on that. So, bacteria, horrible germs which make us sick. True or false?
False! Most bacteria are harmless, and many are even helpful to us. Only a small proportion of bacteria make us poorly. There are typically over 70 different types of bacteria in the mouth. Most of them occur naturally, doing you no harm at all. There are, however, some bacteria that can damage our teeth and gums and cause problems like bad breath.
You're doing great! Next up, how do these bugs cause damage?
It's all because of plaque. A plaque attack! If you don't brush your teeth, millions of bacteria can collect in a sticky substance called plaque. That's the yellow coating you sometimes see on your teeth. If you run your tongue around your teeth before you brush your teeth, you might be able to feel it. Some bacteria love to digest the sugar in our mouth. As they eat, they increase in number and produce acids that break down the surface of your teeth. If not removed, plaque can completely destroy the outside of the tooth and expose the nerves inside, and that's toothache. The more plaque you have, the more of these harmful substances are in contact with your teeth and gums.
Oh, better hurry. What's the best way to see off plaque attack and keep the harmful bugs at bay?
Proper brushing, flossing, and using antibacterial mouthwashes can reduce the number of bacteria that build up in specific areas between the teeth and along the gum line. They'll reduce the plaque and help keep your teeth and gums safe and strong.
And finally, for a bonus point, what about tongue brush?
Well, as we've seen, bacteria are all over our mouths. And there's no point just focusing on getting rid of those on our teeth and gums. Using a tongue brush helps remove those lurking in the ridges on your tongue.
That's correct. And time's up. Brilliant, Professor. Very respectable score there. And lots of data for our digital dental depository.
Professor Hallux's Digital Dental Depository, with support from Philips Sonicare. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
Very quickly, I want to say a hello to Ted Davis. Hey, Ted. He is 6 years old, and he's left a review of the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on the iTunes podcast store. And in it, he's asked if poisonous animals can get poisoned themselves by other creatures. I'm not too sure, Ted, but I think they must be able to. because if you mull it over in your brain, otherwise evolution wouldn't really work, would it? You know, the point of evolution is that it's the survival of the fittest. But if everyone is the fittest, if no one can be poisoned by other poisonous creatures, and there's hundreds of them, we wouldn't get anywhere. But we've managed to evolve the whole planet, and all the nature inside it has evolved to the point where we are now. Still, I'll get a proper animal genius on the show in the next few weeks to answer that officially for you, Ted. Don't worry. Thank you so much for leaving a review. If you've got a science question, by the way, something knocking around your brain that you really want answered, you need to let me know. Ask me as an iTunes podcast store review. Get there, find the Fun Kid Science Weekly, drop 5 stars, leave your name so I know who you are. Then in the little comment box, let me know your science question, and I promise I'll try and get an expert on this show to answer it for you. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, the British Trust for Ornithology, they want you to help listen out to help save a whole species. You see, the conservation status of the tawny owl recently changed from green to amber. It's not good news. It signals like a growing concern for the species. Now, Claire Boothby is from the BTO. She organised the survey and she's on the show. Hey, Claire.
Hello, how are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. So why is the tawny owl at risk?
Well, the thing about tawny owls is actually we don't know that much about them. So being nocturnal, they're very difficult to monitor. So they're actually our most common species of owl in the UK. So we think there's about 50,000 pairs. The problem is that we think that they're declining. So we estimate that they've declined by about 30% since 1991. But we don't really know why, and that's why we're wanting to get more information about them.
What signals have we got that the tawny might be declining in numbers?
Yeah, so the BTO, we have lots of different surveys going on throughout the year, and one of them is the Breeding Bird Survey. And through that, we can get some fantastic information about trends of wild birds. But as I say, tawny owls, being nocturnal, they don't really fit in to the Breeding Bird Survey. So this 30% decline is the best figure that we have, but we want to know more.
And you said you don't know why, but what standard classic risks do things pose to a tawny owl? Who's their main predator?
Well, they do have predators. So things like goshawks, for example, will take them. A fox, if they can catch them, will take the young. But actually, it's probably going to be things like fragmentation of woodland. So they're very much a woodland owl. You see them mostly in our broadleaf woodlands, but they can be in kind of slightly more suburban areas as well. But that might play a part. We're really wanting to look at the impact of urbanisation on these owls. So look at the impacts of potentially artificial lighting and breaking up those areas of woodland.
And aside from losing what is quite a cute creature in the woods, what impact would losing the tawny owl have to general British nature?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So they are a predator. So I mean, they do they will take things like small mammals, sometimes amphibians, sometimes birds and insects. But to be honest, I think from a cultural point of view, it would actually be quite upsetting as well. So tawny owls are fantastic birds, and an owl that whilst we don't see, many of us hear a lot at night, and they are just it's just that most amazing sound, that kind of haunting sound that you hear in woodlands in the evening. I just think it would be such a shame if we didn't hear them anymore.
And what do we know about their behaviour and their activity late at night? So when they are out and about, is there anything that the females do that males don't do? Can we go somewhere specific to try and find different types of tawnies?
Well, so tawny owls, interestingly, they don't move too far. So they're in their territories all year. And there's a reason for that. So because they're nocturnal birds, it's very dark. They need to be able to hunt in that territory. They need to be able to hunt well and find their prey. So they have these territories that they know inside out. They know the best hunting areas. Now, at this time of year, they're particularly vocal. And it's when a lot of the young birds are dispersing from where they were born. and they're trying to seek their own territories. And there's a lot of this territorial communication, particularly with the males. And you hear this hooting sound that the males make. So females can make it too, but it's usually the male owls. And sometimes you can even hear this duet between the males hooting and the females making this contact call, which sounds kind of like a kiwik. And together that creates this twit-twoo sound that you kind of associate with these owls.
Oh, so it's two different creatures making the sounds.
Yeah, so it's two different birds duetting.
Oh, there you go. And the BTO, you are urging people all over the UK to listen out because we can like help save the whole species. Can you tell us more about what you want people to do?
Yeah. So we're wanting to find out more about this, their calling behaviour. So we need as many people as possible to listen for tawny owls. It's really simple. We just want you to listen for 20 minutes a week from your garden or your local park, between sunset and midnight, and tell us whether you hear an owl. Importantly, though, we still want to know even if you don't hear them. So knowing where they're not being heard is just as important as knowing where they are. And if you so you can get in contact with us and register for the survey at www.bto.org/owl. And if you do it, please do share your experience on social media and let us know what you've heard. So it's #heardanowl.
And what are you expecting to find from the research? Are you hoping that we'll have quite a few tawny owls in one part of the country and we can help them out somewhere else?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what we find. So we are wanting to look at this influence of us really and light, artificial light and urbanisation. So we're really wanting a wide range of people from different areas giving us information. In terms of what we expect to find, I would say that losing bits of woodland, connecting woodland, will probably have an influence. And it will be interesting to see what will happen in regards to light. So potentially there'll be more activity with higher amounts of light. So we know, for example, that they call more when there's a full moon, which is quite interesting. But at the same time, I'd expect in more urban areas with fewer trees to have less tawny activity.
And aside from just listening really carefully late at night, is there anything else that we can do to try and help the tawny owl?
I mean, to be able to get this information, to be able to learn more about them, is really, really vital. So all conservation really should have a basis in scientific knowledge. So we don't really even know. We think they're declining, but we don't really know. So we need that evidence base and also to be able to work out why they're declining. And it's only through this kind of work that we're able to then put plans in place and people are able to then conserve these birds.
Brilliant. Well, get on it then. Help save a species. Listen out late at night. You can help out the BTO by going on their website, bto.org/owl, and listen very carefully to those twit-twooing. Claire, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Now, a few weeks ago on Dangerous Dan, we spoke about the assassin bug. Do you remember this? It's the insect that disguises itself with all the carcasses of the animals that it's eaten. When they're dead, it flings their skeletons onto its back to confuse other predators. Well, in researching that online, looking stuff up, I found something else. Something that made one of the most terrifying creatures around just seem even worse. The assassin spider. It may be the world's cruelest spider. Its jaws are 10 times longer than any other spider. It's got this long neck to stop its jaws dragging along the ground. It looks kind of like a bird, maybe a pelican, you know, long neck, huge beak. And it lives to kill its own kind. It eats other spiders. It's found in Australia, South Africa, on Madagascar as well. It's a smart, methodical killer, and it stalks its prey. Now, just tune in, right? Listen to how scary and brutal the assassin spider is. It waits on the edge of another spider's web while they're busy, you know, stalking, spying on the victim. And then, like something from a horror movie, it will pluck the silken strings of the web to get their attention, like it's using a harp and then with the long jaw and the neck, as soon as the spider looks round, it will strike quickly and stealthily, and that'll be it. It will be done. It'll poison it with the fangs, and then it'll chow down on the remains. Brutal. Deadly. Kind of cool, though. The assassin spider, it's a dangerous, fearsome, calculating ninja. We'll talk about why grass up in the Arctic Circle is getting longer in just a sec. First, let's take a quick tour of the UK. This is our series called Britain's Digital Railways. It's where Bex from the club on Fun Kids and me, we hop in a train, we speed all around the country and find out how rails in the future are getting better.
Britain's Digital Railway.
Once you have the tracks in place and a way for passengers to get on board, you can start to run trains. But what's going to power the trains to move them? Dan and Bex are finding out.
Look, Bex, a steam train. They're so cool. I wish we still had them.
Well, actually, we do still have them. You see them at heritage railways across the country, and sometimes they haul specials like that one on the main line. People ride on them for fun.
I wonder why they stopped using steam trains. After all, it seems to be going quite fast.
How trains are powered has changed over time, and there's a reason for these changes. To understand why, let's go back in time. The very earliest trains were gravity-powered or pulled by horses. As you can imagine, this meant they didn't go very fast. As more trains were built and more people wanted to use them, trains were pulled by locomotives powered by steam, engines that burn fuel in fireboxes, creating smoke that rises through chimneys at the front. The heat in the firebox boils water to produce steam, which is fed into cylinders where it expands to drive the pistons. The movement of the pistons turns the wheels with the help of a rod and a crank, which moves the train. The trouble with steam is that it takes a long time to get ready, several hours at the start of the day to build up a fire, and several more at the end of the day to clean out the fireboxes. Steam trains also need to carry around a lot of coal and water. That's weight that slows down the trains. Diesel is another kind of fuel that has powered trains since the 1950s. Diesel trains are easier to maintain. For a start, you don't need someone to tend the fire. Just turn the key and you're off. They're an improvement over steam, but not without their problems. Diesel trains still have to carry their own fuel, which is heavy and takes up valuable space. Diesel is also dirty, like coal, and can be quite noisy.
I guess electric trains are better because they don't carry any fuel at all.
But where does the electric power come from, though? It's like magic.
Not quite, Dan. Wish it was, that'd be quite cool. It's kind of obvious if you look out the window, though, because you see those overhead lines, yeah? Well, our train has a pantograph on the top. It looks a bit like an upside-down coat hanger, and it rubs against the line, and then it collects the electricity.
Bex is right. Electric trains get their power from an overhead contact wire, which hang down from catenaries. The contact wires zigzag slightly to the left and right, so that the pantograph wears evenly. Electric trains are faster than diesel and can accelerate more quickly, helping create more space for other trains. They are also quieter, which is good news for people who live near the railway. And because you don't need large engines or to carry fuel around, you can fit more seats in an electric train compared to a diesel train of the same length. If that all wasn't enough, they're also lighter, causing less wear to the track and require less maintenance. Overall, they're better for the environment. Today, about 40% of Britain's railway network is electrified. Some lines are currently being electrified, and there are plans to electrify more lines across the country.
Bex, have you noticed that sometimes you see sparks above electric trains?
Yep, that's right. But don't worry, Dan, they're caused by an electrical arc.
What? Like Noah's Ark?
Not quite. An electrical arc is just like a small gap that sometimes appears between two electrical lines. Electricity leaps across the gap, causing a spark.
Overhead lines aren't the only way to power electric trains. Sometimes electricity is supplied through rails underneath the train. Whilst cheaper to build than overhead lines, these rails suffer more in the winter when they can be covered by snow and ice, causing trains to lose power.
I wonder how trains will be powered in the future. How about solar panels or windmills? Now that would be a cool train.
Britain's Digital Railway, with support from the Royal Academy of Engineering. Find out more at funkidslive.com/railway.
Right, let's talk about all the science that has been all over the news this week. The final of the Ocean X Prize. It will see fleets of robots compete to map the largest area of seafloor that they can in 24 hours. It will take place off the coast of Greece. Teams have been invited to showcase their technologies over a few months. They have to chart at least 250 square kilometres of seabed down at 4,000 metres deep. They need to find 10 items of interest, and the winner will get themselves $4 million. Also, scientists think that jagged studs of ice may line one of Jupiter's moons. These teeth of ice, they may have formed on Europa, some research is suggesting. They'll reach heights of 15 metres, and it means that water is there, but we may not be able to explore the moon in the future because these things are going to get in the way. And finally, plants in the Arctic, they're getting taller. Grass, shrubs and other plants have been measured over 30 years across Alaska, Canada, Iceland and Russia, and they've found out that they're getting bigger, which means that the air around them is getting warmer, and that means a whole lot more climate change is happening, which isn't brilliant news. That is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen, for downloading and pressing play wherever you are all over the world. I love that some of you are in Australia and Dubai and in America. If you are in a place, in a really cool country from all around the world, we're doing this from the UK. If you're in somewhere that's not here in the UK, let me know. Do it as a review over on the iTunes podcast store, which, by the way, is the best place for you to leave a question. If you've got something sciencey floating around your brain that you want an expert to answer, leave it as a review. Drop 5 stars, your name as well, over on the iTunes podcast store. Just find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on there. Also, it's one of the best places that you can listen to all our brilliant Fun Kids Science series. They're there, they're on the free Fun Kids app, and you can find them at funkidslive.com. And you can hear Fun Kids, we're a kids radio station all around the UK on your DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app. And as always, at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.